Well, so welcome everybody to the UK Sangha. It's Sunday morning. We can call it worship service or change it slightly into worship service. We have just been starting on talking about the Goenka method and basically how it's evolved over time and how it fits into Anapanasati. So, take over to you. Oh, I can't get that.
the knees, the bee's knees, the niche.
Nisha. Okay. Yeah. So you were saying.
Yeah, so in the Goenka course, they introduced this topic of sankharas, and they say that we must purify the mind by removing the sankharas out of the mind-body phenomena, you know, so sankharas are formations.
That's precisely correct. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And when do you do that? When do they teach you to do that?
Well, the process of dissolving sankharas is mostly from observation with equanimity, right? So,
okay, right. That's when you where observe, they go wrong.
Okay, interesting. I'd love to hear the
correct
way.
But before that, you mentioned about the nostrils and the nose tip.
Yeah. All right.
Here's some news for everyone, and that is that the nose or anything like it is not mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the sutta about mindfulness of breathing, which is what Goenka's method is based upon, though he talks more about the Satipatthana. But the scanning is all... let us call it a very formalized way of doing step three of Anapanasati, of mindfully breathing in, experiencing the body, and mindfully breathing out, experiencing the body. Right? Okay, so there is no nose tip in there. The next one is to relax the body, which is the whole point of experiencing the body, is so that it can be relaxed. Mm-hmm. And so there's no nose tip anywhere in the suttas, and most especially it's not in the Anapanasati Sutta, which is the top dog of the, in fact, here's one thing. Bhikkhu Buddhadasa kind of got into a bit of trouble by saying that the Buddha only taught one kind of meditation because we've got those old books that say that there's 40. No doubt you've heard of the 40. Which also includes metta and the Brahma Viharas, and it includes the trauma ground meditations and a whole bunch of other stuff like that coming up with 40 heads. Anybody
casino.
Not heard about these? Right, the casinos. They're in there also.
Casinos.
And guess what? That list was made up long later than the sutras. But it's crept into modern Buddhism. But the Buddha only taught one kind of meditation, and that one meditation is the Anapanasati practice of the Eightfold Noble Path. And so everything has to be tied back to the basic skills that are developed on the Eightfold Noble Path. And that's the connection that Goenka's method is missing. Though they talk about it loosely, then figuring out that the Eightfold Noble Path is taking these items on the path and deeply developing them with the Satipatthana. And the method is through Anapanasati. So in the sutta, it says is that we practice Anapanasati for the fulfillment of the Satipatthana, and that we fulfill the Satipatthana for then the fulfillment of the Sambojana. Now, the Sambojana here strikingly resembles the Eightfold Noble Path itself, but the way that the Sambhojana, or the Seven Factors of Enlightenment, is stated is that this is the fulfillment of the path. And in other words, we start on the path, but when that path is fulfilled, it becomes the very factors of enlightenment. And that we practice these seven factors of enlightenment through the Eightfold Noble Path to bring about knowledge and deliverance. So this knowledge and deliverance, actually in English language, we can say that that's the two kinds of enlightenment there is. The one is wake up to see what a burden you're carrying, and two, set it down. And we do that immediately, okay? And the burdens that we're often carrying is in the Pali is referred to as the sankharas, which is whatever crap that we've got in the mind right now. Just set it down right now.
Yeah. So my question is, sorry to interrupt. Okay. Yeah, just that cognitive process of setting it down. How can we explain that to?
Glad you asked. Step right up.
Like, what is the function? Do you just do it? Is it incommunicable? Or like, you know, what is that mechanism? How do we intentionally set it down? Is it just intention, or?
If you stop asking, I'll answer.
All right.
Okay. So, imagine the color red. Everybody do this. Everybody, can you imagine the color red? Can you see red? It can be a red object or just the color red, or maybe a red on the side of a wall, or maybe a piece of paper. It doesn't matter. Can you see red? Everybody nod or give me a thumbs up or whatever when you can see some red. Okay. Everybody got some red.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. So, gosh, the screen's been moved around. Oh, there you are. All right. Now, while you've got that red, set that aside and go for green. Can you see green in the mind? You know what the color green looks like. You've seen it outside many times. Can you see it on the inside? It can be forms or shapes. It can be leaves. It can be anything. Can you see the color green? Everybody nodding? Got anybody who can't tell green yet? Okay.
I did for a bit, but then the mind wandered.
All right, but you came back to the green and you got some more green. We could talk about green and see the green, okay? And that's a good point. Now, we can't, in fact, avoid the red, but there might be a little creps of red coming in, but we can stay with the green. Now, what I've actually done now is I've actually introduced to you a concept of going back into the red when, in fact, we can receive that coming back and see that our green is being colored, and now we can come back to the green again. Everybody back to green. Okay. Congratulations. Everyone here has a human mind that functions correctly. Yippee-ki-yay, it worked. You can change your mind. Just recognize what you just did. You changed it from red to green. You changed your mind from red to green. Now all we have to do is determine which kind of thoughts are red and how to change them into green. And voila, we've got it. You can see the sankharas as red thoughts. They're old garbage. Throw them out and replace them with something pleasant, something new, something green. And we do that with our breathing. Taking a deep breath and congratulating ourselves. Now, this is actually the Eightfold Noble Path of the Buddha that we're talking about here. Starting with remembering to do this and then check it out to see, are these thoughts red or are they green already? And if they're already green, there's nothing to do. Here we are, everything is hunky-dory. But if this thought is red, throw it out and replace it with a greenish thought. And when we do that over and over and over again, we begin to believe that we can actually do that. We can actually change the mind. And when we get really secure in doing it, because we've done it over and over again so many times, now we've got some real confidence growing. This is what is called sada or shraddha in the Pali. Does not mean faith. This is not faith at all. This is observation over and over again. Remember, we just talked about making associations with the mind, or that the mind is a pattern matching machine. You start matching this pattern of, you can brighten your mind. You can control your mind. You can control these thoughts and change them from red to green, because you keep doing it over and over again. And pretty good, you get the idea of, I can do this.
Is this not the same as trying to refocus on a meditation object before your mind wanders again and you keep bringing it back to the object? Similar
well,
kind
what
of.
What objects are there? The body?
Well, sensorial objects. Yeah.
No,
well,
wait a minute. That's one of the major teachings of the Buddha. That's one of the biggest things that he thought about when he changed it. In the old days, they had kasina meditations. They had fire meditations. They had water meditations. They had sky meditations. In fact, the sky meditations or the air meditations is what gives us meteorology. It gives us astronomy and astrology, all because people spent a whole lot of time in the time of the Buddha with nothing else left to do but just to look up. And that's what they did back then. And you can go into really, really crazy mystical states by just sky gazing or water gazing or fire gazing. Fire gazing seems to be the easiest one of all. But this is what they did. And what Buddha did is he turned that around from the outside to the inside and see the four elements on the inside. So we have the body that is solid. We have the feelings, which are the water. We have the mind itself is the fire, and then the smoke that the mind gives off after it's burned things down is the objects of the mind. Or we can call it Kaya Nupassana, Veda Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana. And the way that we practice that, according to the Buddha, is with the Eightfold Noble Path, through this practice of working with the body of the breath and breathing. So that's it in a nutshell, at least the introduction to it. And there are several things in there that Blanca's practice is missing, and a few things he's added to it.
Can you still do the body scanning technique and do this at the same, you know, when you're doing the body scanning and you're having the thoughts and the red stuff come up, and then you're going into the green stuff? What I've tried when I was doing the body scanning is when I was like going through the body with my awareness, and then something red was happening, that if I was trying to put green in, then I would lose the awareness on the sensation in my body, you know? Does that make sense?
Yes, for someone who's not practicing correctly. And then asking questions about it is proof positive that that's not correct practice.
Okay.
But in fact, which one is more important in reality? That you keep your mind focused on some body part while your mind is rotting? Or go put the fire out in your mind first? Which is more important to do?
Put the fire out, I guess.
Yes. Let's change the mind from red to green. And actually, the Buddha gave specific instructions on how to do that. That in fact, while he was under the Bo tree, if you know that story, there is the time when, in fact, this is actually the key that pops and puts the Paticca Samuppada, or in Thai they say Paticca Samuppada, which you call dependent origination, which is where the whole idea of sankaras come from anyway, that he's got a key to that whole system with this one little phrase. And that is, aha, I got you, Mara. Aha, I see you. Okay, what does that mean? It means in this discussion, I see that red. I see it. That's it. That's the Mara. Now, the Mara, in fact, you've heard of the magical story about Mara having three daughters.
Oh, yes.
You know the three daughters of Mara?
Mm.
I haven't heard.
Loba, Moha, Dosa are their names.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Does that give a hint?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the three daughters of Mara is greed, ill will, and delusion.
I knew one of them was greed. I just didn't know the other two.
Greed, ill will.
In a way, greed and ill will are exactly the same feeling. They're just which direction it's pointed in. But if you want something, then you want to get rid of its absence. If you're trying to put up with something that you don't like, then that means that you want relief from it. So in a way, greed and ill will are the same thing. If we can see that.
So when you say,
pardon?
I was going to say, so when we're cleaning up the mind, we're mostly talking about
cleaning thoughts. Good to see you. Go ahead.
Welcome there. I was just saying, when you talk about cleaning the sankaras, changing from red to green, we're mostly trying to clean up thoughts then. Or does it also apply to sensations on the body? Or is it mostly just mental content? Yeah. Or activity, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, there is actually written right into the Anapanasati, one of the steps is to see the mind's conditioners, which means that there is a relationship in there. And basically what will happen, here's an example of that, of the cycle, is that somebody has a frightening thought, they get some anxiety, then they see that their anxiety, and they know that they don't like anxiety, and they want to get rid of the anxiety, which just makes the anxiety worse. Okay. Mm. Why is that happening? It's because of the mind-body feeling relationship, that they're all tied to one. You're one kind of unit together, but we can only see those connections by seeing the things separately so that we can see the way that they're put back together, kind of like a jigsaw puzzle or maybe a Chinese wooden puzzle box. You've got to take the thing apart and then see how everything fits back together again. And then we can see these cycles. So when we can see these cycles, that means that we can draw back from them. Because normally when we're on a cycle, whatever part of it that we like will change. And then we don't like the next part of the cycle. And then we get used to it for it only to change again. And round and around we go in liking and not liking. And if we can wisely step out of that and see this cycle of liking and not liking, then we can kind of put an end to it.
Isn't there a trap?
We can now make it into a toy. Pardon,
but
what was that?
That liking and not liking experience, can that be a trap of not liking or liking that?
Well, now we're beginning to work with your attitude to recognize that are you going to take on the attitude of a victim? Are you going to take on the attitude of a lion, a winner?
Okay.
That in fact, the attitude is the thing that gives the meaning to our thoughts. That in fact, in physical science and in engineering, we often refer to as an attitude is something that's not perpendicular completely, having gravity only pull it down. But it has a type of leaning to it because the danger is that something, if it's going to fall, it's going to follow in the fall in the direction that it's leaning, right?
Is this chetana?
Pardon?
Chetana? Intention?
Well, you could say yes, intention, but I didn't hear the word. The word that I know is the sama sankapa in the Pali.
Chetana. I read it in the Buddha Dhamma.
Are you saying Vedana?
No.
Okay. Well, never mind. We'll put that aside mm-hmm. right now, and we'll mm-hmm. talk about sankara, which is, sankapa. Sankapa is that attitude, or you could think of it as a single thought moment. That one of the problems that we have with the words that are used in the Pali is that we will take English language words and then think that the Pali word means, because it's close, that that's exactly what it means. And normally when we use the word thought in English, we refer to it as generally discursive thought that has verbiage or talking to it. But in fact, there is quite a lot of thinking that is done let us call it observationally. In other words, if you say it's raining, well, how do you know? Because you took a little bit of time to figure out that it was raining before you ever said it is raining. And that's part of thinking also. And this is what we're actually looking at, is how does your mind lean? Which direction is it going? This is the attitude that you have. Can you actually begin to change your attitude from a loser's attitude to a winner's attitude? How do we do that? With success. One little success after another success after another success after another success. What success is that? The feeling of being satisfied, which is the Pali word is sukha, because sukha is the exact opposite of dukkha, and sukha is step number five on six. On the list on Anapanasati, that sukha is a skill to be developed. How do we develop it? By gladdening the mind and by giving the body a lot of air, because we're actually beginning to control the breath to do that mindfully, breathing in long and mindfully breathing out long. And so by doing that, we energize the body, and we begin to feel good, and we begin to experience feeling good, as well as telling ourselves that, hey, I don't have to have that sankara to think about. I can think about whatever's happening right here, right now, which is actually quite interesting. And this is how we've been to develop the first jhana, is by getting the mind and the body unified, by getting the feelings good, by getting the mind together in wholesome thoughts, by getting the body relaxed. These are the features that bring about the first jhana. So all we had to do now is add that little extra thing called success. And I'm talking about success and congratulations. I'm talking about what you would do if you had just made a Heisman Trophy kind of touchdown. How would you feel? What do they feel? Have you ever seen the way that these athletes feel when they actually make a spectacular goal of some kind? What do they do with their arms? They raise them in the air and cheer. Yay! Yeah! All right! I can do it! Right? That's the way we want to begin to feel about Anapanasati. We want to feel like a champion, like you could do this, like you're the boss now. This is the whole point of it, is can you change your attitude? Can you unify your mind? Because when the mind is noble and wholesome, it's free from all of the garbage like wanting. If you've already got everything that you want, what more could you want? When are you going to become satisfied? And as long as we want things, that means we want to pick up and carry it, which makes it heavy. It's heavy before we even touch it. Because it's already on the mind. We're carrying it around. And all we have to do is just set all that stuff down and be happy in this present moment. Does anybody have any questions? Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. My question is, what would you say is the most fundamental spiritual desire that most people have? Or like, what would the main satisfaction from spiritual processes be in people who seek them out?
Actually, you asked two questions, and the answer to that should be both of them. The answer to the first question is that they're alive. That's what the word spirit means. You're alive already. And the second point is that people don't actually appreciate that very well. That instead of just saying that you're alive, get over it, we should actually be in the point of, yeah, I'm alive already. Which is exactly the way that many people feel when they've had a near-death experience. They thought they were going to die, and they woke up, and they're still alive. Uh-huh. All right. Well, why don't you generate that for yourself? Recognize that, hey, all that crap that I was into, at least I survived. So this feeling of life, of being free from all of the troubles that you've gone through, that you actually survived. Wow, isn't that marvelous? You're still alive. You made it. And we can relax. So this is part of the practice that many of the teachers don't teach. This is Samasankappa. We've got to get on top of our own world. In fact, one of the ways of saying it is that everyone is an emperor of their own pile of dirt. Every one of us is an emperor of our own pile of dirt. The question is, are you going to be buried under it? Are you going to be clawing your way to the top? Or are you going to be sitting happily right on top of your own world? Your choice, because it's a mental attitude.
Thank you.
Don't thank me. This is Buddha talking. This is suttas. We have to get this Samasankappa going. We have to change it from the negative. We have to change it from the red to the green. And then it just keeps getting green. So does anybody have any comments about this? Been a lot of fun.
Can you hear me okay?
Pardon?
Can you hear me okay? The microphone isn't very good. I hope you can hear me.
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. So I was going to ask a question kind of related to this. So are there any tips for generating the positive attitude apart from taking deep breaths? So I know a lot of people use like visualization and stuff. They kind of visualize, you know, unwholesome thoughts getting smaller.
That's exactly right.
Smaller.
There are all kinds of ways.
Yeah, my question is related to something particular. So I don't know if you've heard the term aphantasia, but there are people who have this thing. And it's basically a very diminished visual imagination. So it's very hard to like conjure up images. So when we did the exercise with the red and the green, I can conjure up the concepts, but not really the colors. So it isn't very common, but it's like 1% of the population or something.
I tell you what, I see a lot of green right above your head. Turn around and look up and see green.
Yeah.
Can you see it? Okay. Do you remember what it looks like now when you're not looking at it? Then look at it again. Turn around and look at it again.
Yeah.
Can you see the green? Okay. Can you remember it at least for now? This is Kasina meditation, by the way.
I can do it while looking, but like if I close my eyes, I get like a flash of the image and then it disappears. So I guess with Kasina practice,
right,
it kind of
so
tends
to
stay for a while.
Make it a little bit longer next time. Open your eyes and see the green, and then close your eyes and keep the green, and then open the eyes and see the green, and then close the eyes and keep the green. And it'll go away very quickly until you start practicing.
Daniel Ingram wrote a whole book about this.
Yeah, it's old stuff. It's not mine. I'm not dreaming this stuff up right now. I read those the books he read, or something that's something like it.
So I was asking this in the context of, like, you know, people who have a good visual imagination, they're able to, like, you know, get a good feeling just about thinking, you know, imagining or remembering something that makes them feel.
Wait a minute. You just told me that you do not have a good skill at visualization.
Yes,
that correct?
Exactly. So that's the problem. Okay. I cannot generate
and
good feelings.
Now you are in a state of wanting something you don't have. Is that correct?
Yep. So I want a way to generate good feelings.
Let's get into that a little bit. And instead of capitalizing on the skills that you do have and getting yourself into samadhi, you're going to actually want and desire and cling to one skill that you know will get you into samadhi, but that you can't do that one very well. Oh, poor me.
Yep.
Let's all have a pity party for him.
Okay.
Yeah. Or you can figure out something that you are good at. That, in fact, I can give you a list of things from various professions that will give a hint like that. That I really like to have musicians. Mm-hmm. I really like to have mathematicians and engineers and even philosophers and psychologists. And I like those. Why? Because those are the kind of people that actually think and apply things. There's another group that I would like very much, and I have had some of those also, and that is martial artists. Why? Because martial artists know how to be here now, because otherwise in the ring, they're going to get their face smashed if they're not watching what's going on. And so they've already developed some skills they need. Okay, because if they can apply those skills to keep their face from being punched, then they can apply those skills to stop punching themselves in the head on the inside. Just a matter of changing it from the outside to the inside. So I'm sure that you've got some skills that would be of enormous value to you. But you're thinking that you're at a loss, that you can't do it because of visualization. But in fact, there are probably times in your life that you felt really, really good. Do you remember any time in your life that you ever felt really, really good?
Yes, I do, but abstractly. So that's the core issue that
okay.
I cannot inhabit the memory.
Let's go
somehow.
For the abstract. Let's go for the best abstract that we can do. And stay with that.
Okay.
Now, do you know any jokes? Surely,
yes,
Evan,
I know some
jokes.
Yes.
I mean, I tell jokes all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know any jokes?
Yeah.
Did you ever think that any of those jokes were ever funny?
Yes.
Do you think that if you told yourself that joke now, that you could think it was funny now?
Yep, there are some jokes that I always find funny.
All right, okay. Well, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a skill.
Yeah.
The skill of telling a joke is quite rare, in fact. So congratulations, you've got a skill. You can tell yourself a joke.
I'm not good at telling them, but I do enjoy them.
All right, well, you tell yourself the ones that you enjoy, and then enjoy them. Okay. And you can also remember things that have happened that you had joy from. So you know what joy is like. You've had it before. You wouldn't have been alive if you'd never had any joy. And if you claim that you've never had any joy, you're just in a state of denial, which happens often. But everybody's had joy before. And so to delight the mind means to go back into that state, to lighten up, to find some joy. Because only it's through the lightening up that we're actually going to get down to the actual development of the sukha. The sukha has a particular definition. And that definition is that it has to do with safety and security. So wherever you are, do you feel safe and secure there? If not, then let's look at that first, because that's one of the most basics, to recognize that, in fact, we can tell ourselves about it. And in fact, there are no, let us say, large animals under the clothing that we're wearing right now, other than the one that you want there. Okay? That there are no pythons circling your feet. There are no tarantula spiders on the keyboard, right? So we can, and you can actually hear the joke and the joy in this. Well, of course there's not any of that stuff. Of course there's not a boogeyman under the bed. But when we're kids, we can imagine all kinds of things, and just a split second thought's enough to turn us into rubble. So we have to actually think our way through it and recognize that we actually are safe. Does anybody here now not feel safe? Does everybody here already feel safe enough? Don't feel safe now. There's no reason to proceed. Everybody's feeling pretty safe, okay? Safe and secure. The next item on the list is the one that's really hard for a lot of Goenka students, and that is to get comfortable, because their comfort has to do with what kind of postures they can get into and sit in, and how long they can sit there, and they can strongly determine how to keep a posture. But the Buddha taught about comfort and would recommend getting yourself into a comfortable posture, one that you can stay in for a while. But if you do get uncomfortable, get yourself back comfortable again. That's the whole point of it. That's why he said, go to the forest or to a foot of a tree or to an empty hut and sit down. Now, in the Pali, the word, I forgot what the actual word is, but you can look this up if you like. The word is to sit on a sitting place like a couch or a chair, but it is translated into English as cross-legged. And there is no cross-legged, it's furniture. And yet it's translated into English that you're supposed to sit in a cross-legged posture, maybe even the half Burmese or the full Burmese or the lotus or whatever you can get into, or you can do some Zen and sit on your heels. Or if you can't do that, sit on a bench and pretend like you're sitting on your heels. There's just all kinds of stuff. In fact, the Thai people can even sit on the floor in a way that I've never been able to sit. With all of those years of sitting on the floor, could not get it so that I could put my right leg out to the side, fold my left leg under, and sit down on my butt and on the right thigh on my left ankle. Can't do it. But they can, you know why? Because they've been doing it their whole lives. And so sitting postures is not what the Buddha teaches. He teaches to be comfortable, because only when you're comfortable as well as feeling safe and secure can you then begin to feel satisfied. But you can only feel satisfied when you get the sankharas out of the mind, which means all of the red or all the stuff that you want and any of that kind of stuff, and actually enjoy the moment. Become in the present moment, right here, right now. The body is comfortable. We're safe. We're secure. There's no place to go and nothing to think about. Isn't that great? Wow. I could finally take a rest, as if whatever job that needed to be done has already been done now. And what job was it that needed to be done? Relaxing. And so this is the teaching of the Buddha, this state of getting yourself completely relaxed and satisfied, and the Pali word is sukha, which is exactly opposite in the Pali language as dukkha. But in fact, in the Thai language, dukkha and sukha are opposites, and I've been informed by a student that even in the Gujarati language, that dukkha and sukha are opposites. So take my word for it, guys. If you want to come out of dukkha, which is the whole teaching of the Buddha, dukkha, dukkha, nirvana, get yourself into a state of sukha. There you are, right then and there. How long does that last? As long as you can sustain it, which is also part of that practice, to apply the mind to the wholesome, get yourself into a really wholesome state, and then see how long you can stay there before those reds start coming back in. And when you catch them, you can chase them right back out again and keep that green. And the little red comes in, out you go. Aha, I see you, Myra. I see you. Get out. Out you go. Now, notice that one of the things that many students will do is when the red comes back in, they get all frustrated. They get red. They see red, they get red. Oh, no. I want to have some wholesome thoughts here, guys, and I can't do it. You know, well, that's just being a loser again. Never mind. Throw those red thoughts out and say, oh, yeah, well, I can do it now. You keep practicing over and over and over again, changing those unwholesome thoughts. And, but you've already practiced. You guys know how to do this already. Probably doing it many, many times. But now we're going to make a habit of remembering to practice and to keep doing it.
Need some time and practice. Right effort.
Right. Over and over and over again. But the point is that every time that you do this, you get the reward right then and there.
That's the difference, yeah.
That the reward is not off in the future, that this is not a buy now, pay later or backwards kind of thing. This is you get what you pay for right then and there. What do we pay? Right up. We pay attention. And what do we get out of it? This present moment. Wow, you're still alive. Isn't that great? So we begin to pay attention to this present moment and how marvelous it is, as opposed to the past, which is all dead. And yet that's where we stay in the past, trying to fix it. It's broken, you know. Every time you start thinking about the past, you'll start recognizing what's broken about it that needs to be fixed. So now we're making a plan, huh? We're going to try to repair the past. And when we catch ourselves doing that, we can say, hey, man, that's red. Let's drop that and let's just think about what's happening right now and stop thinking about trying to fix the past. As Jesus would say, let the dead bury the dead. We're just going to boogie on down the trail.
Should you ever use memories to generate sukha, like old, like childhood memories, or just good memories to
create? Yeah, you just heard me do that with Johnson. I just did that. I also noticed a smile on his face, and then he says conceptually.
I can also mention Damaratu's mantra of Coca-Cola.
Look at that. It works. Isn't that amazing? That mantra actually works. It's one of the best mantras that I know of. Everybody gets a kick out of Coca-Cola when it's a mantra. Notice how many of you, in fact, saliva is beginning to flow.
I didn't get it. I mean, I remember you said something about Coca-Cola, but what was the key point of this?
The point is that in Asia, especially in Indian Hinduism, they will pick a mantra that is often something that really means something to one of the people. But when we give a Westerner that mantra, it won't mean much of anything. So you can sit and say Om Namah Shivaya until kingdom comes, and it doesn't mean a thing to you.
Mm.
But if you can find a mantra that's actually valuable, wholesome, and useful, one they practice in Thailand is Budo, but they've been practicing this is a Buddhist culture.
Mm. They understand what it means.
To talk yourself into bliss if you're up to it is Jesus, 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 Jesus. Let's go, boy. Okay, so this is how people work themselves up. This is what mobs do. They chant. Right? So get something in chant. This is a mantra. Coca-Cola will do. Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola.
All right.
All right.
Coca-Cola wasn't so big here. I mean, the big time of Coca-Cola in East Germany was the 90s. I didn't really...
Okay, wrong generation for you. The word Coca-Cola means something. When I was 3 years old, I had a stomach ache, and my mom took me to the doctor.
This I remember now, yeah.
Coca-Cola, and so every time I think of the word Coca-Cola, I start to salivate. And so that's why I use that as an example, but it works for a lot of people. They recognize,
We are Pavlovian dogs.
We are all a Pavlovian dog. Get over it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, it's pretty
simple. We just remember the wrong things. The dogs are smart enough to forget all of the bad stuff. If I beat you in the morning, you'll hate me all afternoon. If I beat the dog in the morning, he'll be all over me with love and affection and licking my face in the afternoon. He forgets all about it. I intend for you guys to understand about your own past. Forget about it. That's what Goenka calls the Sankara. It's just the past. It's just the old garbage. Don't dwell in the past. Dwell in the present moment is marvelous. Now, I actually had a...
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, just any tips for waking up, paying attention? Any hacks?
Yes, the hack is repetitive practice. Repetitive practice. Just like any child that's going to learn to play the piano has to sit down and practice that pass, that thing, over and over and over again. And then, in fact, this is part of the reason why the Anapanasati Sutta is worded the way that it is mindfully we take a deep in-breath. And mindfully, we take a long out-breath. And then mindfully, we take another in-breath. What's this mindfulness stuff with this sati is that when we are remembering to make this a long breath, this breath, then that's actually practicing sati. So every breath that you do recognize as a long breath or as a short breath, that's sati. Is to wake up and look at how you're breathing.
Okay.
Then we begin to wake up and what are we thinking? Then we begin to wake up, how am I feeling? Then we begin to wake up, what a bunch of garbage that is. And there you have the Satipatthana.
Is there a certain amount of force or conscious intention we should use?
Yes. It's called right effort. Thank you for bringing it up. Right effort is actually part of the Eightfold Noble Path, right noble effort that is required in order to bring on the right noble Samma Sankappa of getting your act together. In other words, in order to get your act together, you're going to have to do a whole lot of gathering around after you see how much a pile of shit you've got that's all over the place. One item at a time, you see it, you pick it up, you put it in the pile, and pretty soon you got your bag of shit together. That's what this is all about. If I can say it in a colorful way.
Sometimes those turds get very old, very stuck. Can't get them out.
Never mind, start again.
Any decrease?
Oh, I hear you. Oh, poor him. Sometimes it gets old and stuck. Do you hear that? Let's all have a pity party. And recognize that too is just a red thought. We can change it to green, and we can say, yes, I can do that. Yeah, it's old and it's stuck. You got a chisel?
It's so counterintuitive.
Oh, my
because...
dear, I've got one that's old and stuck. Oh, my dear, I'm going to go get it.
It is so counterintuitive because we are told our whole lives things are completely different. Almost the opposite in Western.
Congratulations. Yeah. Wake up. You have been lied to your whole life. That's why you are a victim. It's because you have been victimized. Wake up and live the life of the winner that you could have been a child if they hadn't beat you into being whatever they beat you into being. This is why they call it freedom. This is what moksha is all about, is to release that sankhara, to release all of that old stuff from the past. Get over it. Let it go. Drop it. Be here now. This is a really great place to be, and you're still alive. No matter how much sankhara you had, you're free from it right now if you let yourself be. Any comments? This is so much fun, guys. Thank you. I'm really this.
In the beginning, it's especially for me, what was a key element is this tendency to drift off into delusion, replacing being at fassa, being at contact in the sense doors, with an internal delusion of being in the sense doors. This wasn't really, I couldn't really see this. But with practice over and over and over again, eventually there were some glimpses and then bigger glimpses and then bigger, bigger, bigger. And then I could see, oh my, Idya Pachayata, I'm constantly in this fog of self-generated bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it's quite liberating
to know
epiphany.
That we've been between ourselves, huh?
Yeah.
It's really liberating to figure out, this is how I'm stuck. Oh, now I get it. I understand finally that I have been making my own prison.
This is really looking, this is really thinking, this is really hearing, this is and not some print of it.
Can't get it out of a book. This is the part of the Dhamma that does not come bound.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Actually, when we get above the maze, we can see the maze as a maze without finding the maze amazing. The reason the maze is amazing is because we're stuck in the maze. We're down too close to the ground. So imagine that I've seen two kinds of mazes. One is out of bushes that are so high that you can't see over it. And those mazes are really hard to get out of. But if you can see exactly that same maze that's cut into carpet on the floor where you can walk around, you can also, by just looking around, see the entire maze. Then you know exactly how to get out of it because you can see it from above. This is why I recommend that you do that for your own mind.
This is why we go from...
Look at what's going on.
This is why we go from Sila over Samadhi to Panya, right?
Right. From actually,
Panya,
all we
Samadhi,
need in
Sila.
The beginning is enough Sila to get secluded, is enough Sila to get away from it all, to get away from so that you can sit down and get some seclusion and get some quiet. And then the next thing we do is that we get the red out. That's the purification of the mind, which is normally called also Samadhi. And then the next one is the purification of the view, which is then Panya. And that is to see this cycle of red and green and red and green.
Don't we try to go from wisdom over Samadhi to Sila?
Well, actually, wisdom is the actual starting point. which is right noble view. There's actually two paths. There's the ordinary path, that is sila samati panya, and then there is the noble path, is the panya samati the sila,
exactly,
winding up as the end result. And someplace along the way, every student has to move off of the ordinary path onto the noble path. That's why I keep my boots on. It's because it's my job to cook them out, to kick them off of the ordinary path onto the noble path.
But not in the what?
Pardon?
Not in the what?
Not in the what? Oh, you better believe that the noble abbots of all the wats that I've been to, they know how to use boots.
Yeah. I'm trying to.
Basically, you are not allowed to talk here.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
So, anybody got anything else?
I've got one small thing.
Okay.
I was always looking for, or at least in recent times, the Theravada equivalent of the clear light or the luminous mind. And I found something called in Pali, I believe it's pronounced Bhavanga or Bhavanga.
Yes. Okay, all right.
I was wondering how one, through something like Anapanasati, comes to realize that state or recognize its presence in our fundamental nature.
One of the local meditation centers where actually Ajahn Po has retired to is named Deepa Bhavan, which is that word that you're using. The word Bhavan also has a similar point to it called Bhagwan. Bhavan actually means itself development. So Deepa is the word for light, and Bhavan means the development of light.
Well, there's the one that is Bhavana, but there's one that has a G in it, which is translated as the ground of becoming or condition for existence. Also, Bhavanga Chitta, I think it's pronounced.
I'm not sure about that one.
It says it's in the Abhidhamma, but I don't know.
Oh, okay, right. I plead ignorance, Your Honor. Yes, but my attitude about the Abhidhamma is very similar to the view that Bhikkhu Buddhadasa had about the Abhidhamma. Is that if you get cold at night, you got some firewood there.
Oh, wow. I'm very much appreciative of traditions that sort of cut away the excess fat and just leave the flesh and bones. So if it's something that you feel like is sort of that excess, then I wouldn't be too keen on looking into it too deeply, but I was curious to see what your understanding of the fundamental nature of mind was, and that was sort of the vocab that popped up for that.
Okay. The fundamental nature of the mind is that it is constantly changing. And if you are intending for it to, it will be under constant development. But if you don't have control over it, it's going to be all over the place because it's going to change. Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't. But when you get control over that, then that means that your mind is in a state of development, which is that problem. You can see what's going on. There's a lot of little analogies for this in the Pali. And this is one of them. To develop. It's actually part of Anapanasati that you see in the English language version that we have of thus one trains oneself. That's the development. We train in samadhi, which means we train in sukha. We train in pitti, in the sense of feeling the exhilaration of being a winner, that we could do this, we can handle this, that this is a piece of cake. This is easy peasy, and our whole life becomes easy peasy because of the attitude that we have. Okay, the attitude of a winner. And this is to be developed. This is a skill to be developed. Very few people ever get this skill without it actually being developed. But this is why it has to be practiced. Is the practice is, in fact, another word for develop. It has to be practiced. And so what? When do we do this? When do we practice this? The answer to that is every time that we remember it. Sati. Well, when do we remember? Every time we remember to remember, let's get some memory going here. Let's start watching what? I wakey-wakey, folks. Wakey-wakey. Time to wake up and look at what's going on. And then do it again, and then do it again, and then do it again. And pretty soon you get it on a roll and it feels really good. But so long as you keep coming back, oh, this is hard, or this is tired, or there it comes again, and this is too much, and all of that, those are those kind of red thoughts that have been interfering with you being successful right from the get-go. When you can do this correctly, right from the very beginning. There's no reason to spend a lot of time on the ordinary Eightfold Noble Path. Let's get on the Noble Path immediately. Let's start practicing correctly. Let's change those red thoughts, those unwholesome thoughts, into wholesome thoughts, which means that you're changing the thoughts from I can't do it into I can do it.
Something I always did before I engaged in Buddhism more directly was self-analysis of thoughts. Like I would, if I had a negative thought that really bothered me, I would look directly at the desire, whether it be selfish or unselfish, that caused that thought and the solution that the thought implies, right? Like if you have a thought that says, man, this hunger is terrible. To an extent, the thought is actually just directly asking you to go eat food rather than just complaining on its own.
Right. Okay. And the wisdom to know the difference.
Right.
Right. That's actually an important part. Let's have not just the courage, but the enthusiasm to go change the things that we can change. And to accept the things that we can't change, like other people, or the society, or the rules that everybody keeps. Can't change any of that. And having the wisdom to know the difference between what we can change and what we can't change, that's a marvelous way of looking at it. Okay? Let's figure out what we can change. And one of the things we can change is our own attitude. So we can either see the world as a terrible place, or we can see it as a marvelous place. Or we can see it the way that it is, as a marvelous place with a whole lot of unhappy people in it. And why do they are so unhappy? It's because they've got a wrong attitude, a bad attitude about it. And so this is why we want to practice it, is because you have spent your whole life around other people who were teaching you how to feel bad. And you know very well how to feel bad. So now you need to learn how to feel really good so that you can see that you do have control in your own life already anyway. That you've always been in control. You just didn't know it. But once you begin to actually control it and take it in the direction you want to go in, then you recognize, hey, I've been in charge all along. And I thought I was the passive.
In some states of meditation, when I got a little farther, quote unquote, what I would call a deeper state, I realized pretty quickly that, in my own opinion, I was sort of the pilot of the body rather than just the observer. Then I got a little farther than that, and then I thought to myself, to an extent, that all there was left was just observation. And then I really don't know where there other than, of course, the enlightened state, where in between what that would look like?
Well, that's certainly going in the right direction. The first one at the bottom would be anxiety is there, and we're in anxiety saying, I feel anxious. Then we observe the anxiety and say, I am not the anxiety. I'm the one that observes the anxiety, right? And then we start looking at that and says, wait a minute, I'm not the observer. There's just observation, and there is nothing but observation, including the observation of the observation, and there's no real self there. But where does dukkha come from is when we then have the delusion that there is some self that needs protection, which comes instinctually from the self-preservation instinct. We grew up as human beings out of nature, out of evolution, with the idea that if you did not wake up and check out what was going on and get some adrenaline going, you're going to get eaten 3 seconds from now. Guess what? That doesn't happen much in our society. It's not 3 seconds that it takes for us to get eaten. It takes 35 or 40 years for us to get nibbled away. But we still have that fear often. The fear of, there it goes again, another nibble is gone. Okay? And so we actually have a lot of false positives of fear. We have fear when we don't really need to be feared. If we can begin to recognize that much of the fear that we've had, it was actually kind of prevented in the sense that any bad thing that you can ever think of what was going to happen, it probably 99% of the time never actually happened. It took care of it long before. Or it never happened anyway. Completely wrong. An example of that is going home late from the school one time. I thought the girlfriend would be really angry at me because I was chatting with students and having a ball, and she expected me at 2 and I'm at 4, walking in the door expecting hell to pay. And she was so happy to see me, and it completely confused me at the time. So these are the kinds of things that we have expectations of something going to happen that never happens. So it's better to begin to see that kind of stuff. Recognize, oh, that's just another unwholesome thought. I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe wait and see what's happening and I'll play it by ear. In other words, do you actually trust yourself enough to play by ear and live this present moment without planning for it in the past? Can you go out on stage and perform in front of 500 people without having a repertoire? Or will the old repertoire be good enough and you don't have to practice or perform or do anything? But you know this syllabus by heart. You've got it down. You've taught this course so many times that you don't have to review. And you just walk out on stage. This moment's good enough. Okay. But how many of us spend all of our lives rehearsing for a stage play that we never get to perform?
Well, it's really funny because a lot of the time when we deliberate or practice or rehearse, we're actually just doing that to soothe our nerves. And when we actually engage in the actions that we were planning for, we do nothing similar to what we planned on doing. It's almost like we'll just sort of argue with ourselves about it and then make a snap decision automatically at the last second.
Right. And so look how hard we tried. Look how much we done. And it was all pointless when we could have just been sitting here and feeling good without having to come to a conclusion. That is, in fact, one of the important things about right noble view is that ordinary wrong view and ordinary right view are both conclusions. They're both ways of looking at the world. They're world views. The wrong view can be stated in the sense of, I can get away with it. I can do it. And the ordinary right view is, oh, no, you can't. We're going to make sure you don't get away with it. We're going to hire some cops or teachers or lawyers, or if none of that, soldiers, whatever. And if none of that works, we'll get a priest. We'll get you someday, but you won't get away with it. The right noble view is not a viewpoint or a noun. It's more of a verb. It's like looking, investigating. And keep looking and keep investigating, but only come to the conclusion of what you're seeing right now. If you take this as the conclusion and then go around not looking anymore, this conclusion and the reality is going to change. We have to keep looking. That's the right noble effort that we'll never stop doing. When you would say, well, does an Arahat ever get to the point that he never has anything? The answer to that is only when he's dead. Because if he stops watching and stops looking, something's going to clobber him. So you got to keep your mind and eye open. You got to stay open. So this is how we start to practice. We don't demand that we're open all the time or that we're alert and aware all the time. But we remember every time that we can remember to wake up. Be here now. See how things are right now. Then we'll fall asleep again and back into thought process, and we can say, wake up, and come back again, over and over and over again. To wake up, to see what's going on, to take right effort to change it, and then congratulate yourself for the change that you just made. This is the Eightfold Noble Path. And those four things bring the mind together into a unified state. Red thoughts will always get us into an argument with ourselves. But these kind of thoughts, the unification thoughts, place us in a state where we don't want anything. We're good. Everything is fine. I'm satisfied. I'm okay. Don't need a thing except this next breath. And it was a good one, too. I invite you, have a breath on me. The bar's open. Well, does anybody have anything to say?
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I was just saying, I have one more week until a deadline, and then I'll be able to start practicing Anapanasati without my laptop in front of me, and I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Well, when you're looking forward, recognize that, oh, I'm looking forward right now when I can do it right now.
Yeah, that's true. It's not quite the same. I like sitting down and just shutting my eyes and be like, huh, nothing to do. And then doing that for a lot longer than just 3 seconds and being like, keep typing.
Yes, if you can practice 3 seconds, then when you do have five, then you'll be able to manage that whole 5 seconds. If you don't practice,
This is very true. This is the thing I'm trying to remind myself, is that if I still need to, like, I still can do it for the little bit of time I have. And that is worth so much, because when I sit down, it's a lot easier. I was speaking to a monk recently, and I think this is something that you've mentioned before. He used the analogy of, if you're a painter and you're painting all day, at the end of the day, if you're not washing your hands regularly, you're going to have a thick layer of paint on your hands. And of course, it's going to take ages to wash off. Whereas you talked about it, if you're running a restaurant, you got to keep clearing the counter little by little occasionally so that you don't have a big mess at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good paint analogy, right? If you paint all day and you don't wash your hands, then you've got a whole bunch of paint built up. But if you occasionally go and wash your hands and get the paint off, then they're not so hard to wash. Yes, this is the whole point of Anapanasati. Let's do this often, to where within the Goenka method, they have it, oh, you do it for a long, long time. So I would recommend in that regard, for the students to say, okay, let's put an hour a day in. 10 minutes at a time, 6 times a day.
Yeah.
Because then we, if you have only 10 minutes to get your mind together, you'll actually do that. If you have an hour, you'll piss it away.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And that's okay. Like, you know, sometimes circumstances mean that you only have 10 minutes, but sometimes circumstances mean you have 2 hours, and you got to make the best of what you have every single time. Because thinking, oh no, I didn't meditate today, and oh no, this, that, and the other, is just like, well, it's easy to do, and I do it 100%, but, you know, I remember that, like, hang on, no, I can just, if I have time to be upset about not meditating, I also have time to just take a deep breath.
Exactly so. So when you, instead of having all of that fascination that you just had, you could cut right through it and says, I'm glad I don't have to think about meditation right now.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about all of that stuff now, what schedules I'm on or anything. I can just remember to relax and have joy right now. Isn't that great?
Indeed.
That's the way to practice it. Remember to practice right now rather than remembering to set a schedule to practice later. Caught you, Jerry, caught you.
So, and it happens. I've had a regular practice, you know, pretty intense for the last year. And then in the last few weeks, things happened. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is how it is right now. And once it will be over, it will be back to the things that we were. And that's how it goes. Even monks get busy.
Things never were the same.
Yes, exactly.
But that's one thing about evolution, is it's always heading, the time is always going in one direction. It doesn't go back. Humans can put the connections together because there are some kinds of cycles. They say that it doesn't repeat, but it rhymes. And so it's not ever going to be. Here's a really good example of that. How many people thought that when COVID is over, things are going to get back to normal? Guess what? There is a new normal, but it's a new normal. It's not the normal before COVID. This is a new normal. It's not the same thing. Nothing ever is. The only thing that matters, though, is that are you okay with it right now? Because if you're not, you're in dukkha. And so getting right with whatever is going on is the way of feeling good. It's not my problem, not my worry. Let me get my mind straightened out. And when I get my mind straightened out, then I really won't worry about it. So, has anybody got anything to say? Let's go ahead and finish this off. This has been a really great talk. I really had a ball today. How many people have had a ball?
Slamming.
Excellent. So, does anybody have any parting words? Anything to say?
Don't worry.
Any marvelous one-liners? Go ahead, Carl.
I just want to say, don't worry, be happy. That's it.
Don't worry.
That's all there is.
With metta, I'll say peace and love.
You guys have some love fun together. Call each other. You guys are on the call together. Let's get some sangha going here. You don't need me. You've got all the sangha that you need. Go pester each other with joy.
A quick question.
Yes, go ahead.
Are you uploading this to YouTube?
Yeah.
I think Parker. We got flashed today a little bit. Because someone walked by and they were like taking a shower or something. I think there was some nudity in the video. So you might want to check for that.
I think one of your visitors or relatives.
One of my relatives?
I don't know.
I believe it was a woman or someone walked past. They were in the hammock or something like that before. Then they took a bath and then they weren't wearing clothes. So.
With a towel or something like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it wasn't nudity, it was just a towel.
Oh, no, it was the full back and buttocks.
It was a bit flash, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Okay. So it would get removed from YouTube, is all I'm saying. You might want to add like a black box or something in that area on the right or left side of your screen.
Okay. Do you know what moment it was in?
I believe it was about 40 minutes ago, if I had to guess.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll ask Crocker to take a look. If anybody can identify what actual moment it was, that's a go for a nudity search, and so will I. We'll see if we can identify the moment in time. Did anybody else see it?
Yes.
Clearly not paying enough attention here.
Okay, guys. Well, we'll finish now. We'll see you later.
Bye, Damarato.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Damarato.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.